Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Hey, welcome back to See Also. I'm Brody Lancaster.
And I'm Kate Jinks. And hello! This week is a poodle ep dedicated to the one, the only party girl.
Drag. It's been a really long time coming.
It really has.
This has been on our list for general poodles, New Year's poodles, any kind of party-themed occasion.
Oh, yeah. It's like a permanent See Also, this film.
Yeah. Well, it has everything. Iconic cult indie actors, great soundtrack, the era. We love our mid-90s movies.
Particularly in New York.
Yeah. Leopard print skirts.
Thank you.
It's got everything. Tick, 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 tick.
The Dewey Decimal System has got it all. It's truly, truly got it all.
I wrote down, like, you know, we usually in a poodle episode talk about the plot of a film that we're going to be discussing. And my plot for Party Girl was Mary learns the Dewey Decimal System.
If you're a new listener, obviously also a poodle episode, because we do get asked from time to time. And it's one of those things where we came up, we've just said it and then it became law.
Yeah.
And then it's like, we understand what it is, but it is such a silly thing. Anyway, a poodle episode is where we allow ourselves to go deep on one particular topic. It's usually like a movie or a book or a TV series or, you know, something like that.
And why is it called a poodle episode, Jinxie?
Oh, it's called, well, the big thing is because poodles come in different sizes and we refer to our normal episodes as a standard poodle. And so this would be the toy poodle. But we just call them poodles now.
What is Top Chef?
Top Chef is a toy poodle, but he is like, he's a chunky toy.
Did I ever tell you about a poodle I met in upstate New York?
No.
She was a big one. So one of the really oversized long boys. Her name was Genevieve and she was friends with Bill Clinton. Because
what about Hillary?
I think Hillary wasn't going on walks petting Genevieve like Bill was. And in upstate New York, I guess the owners of this poodle, who was there on the one and only Thanksgiving I've ever been to, yeah, they lived near the Clintons. And Bill always stopped to chat to, how would Bill say her name? Genevieve.
Genevieve. Cue saxophone.
Yeah.
Anyway, that's what a poodle is. But Party Girl, iconic film from 1995, starring Parker Posey as Mary, who is essentially like a party promoter. She's an event organizer. She puts on parties essentially just to pay her rent. We truly have all been there, right?
Yeah, and people know her in the city as like the girl. She's a girl. She's an it girl of like the downtown party scene.
Yeah, she truly is. But she gets thrown in the slammer for having an illegal party and needs to. She has like one phone call, of course, and she calls her aunt. Her aunt doesn't even recognize her on the phone.
Godmother?
And she bails out Parker Posey and makes her work in the library that she runs, the public library. And there's this like back and forth of whether Mary's actually any good, whether she's like smart enough to be a librarian. Mary doesn't want to work in the library and then grows to love the stacks.
As anyone would. But also I love the distinction that this film makes between being like having studied library sciences versus being a clerk and like shelving books.
Yes.
And like it's such a diss from the other librarians that Mary, they're like, you're not a librarian, you're just a clerk. And it's like Parker Posey, the coolest girl ever, who you'd be dying to have as your workmate.
Yeah, and they don't want her there.
No, they hate her.
They hate her. And I also love that they kind of go into this, like the inner workings, like the inner machinations of how librarians feel about the kinds of libraries they work in, like whether you're working for a college library, like a Ivy League college, or whether you a library, or whether you're working at a public library. It's very much like the teacher thing of like, what kind of school are you teaching at?
Like you're a sellout if you go to one of these like stately Ivy institutions.
Yeah. I love all that. It must be like just one of the best films to watch as if you are a, be it a clerk or a librarian.
The director of the film, Daisy von Schürrle-Mayer, has said in interviews that she's like, you know, it's not like five librarians a day chasing me down saying they loved the movie, but like librarians loved the movie.
Yeah, librarians would love this movie. Do you know, this is the first film I ever programmed like for an event. Baby little programming. It was for the Readers Festival in Sydney that was running kind of adjacent to the Writers Festival, and by Angela and Alice. And it was super fun. And I was in this like tiny venue that like we used to also throw parties in opposite.
Perfect.
Yeah, totally. Opposite like the Mausoleum Station of Central Station. And
what year was this?
This would have been, I don't know, like 2009-ish, or I'm actually not too sure. And yeah, so we screened this, and it was before I understood how film rights worked. So whoops.
So Daisy didn't make anything from
me. Daisy didn't make a dime off me.
She would have liked it though. She would have liked the party space.
I think she would have. And I played some shorts before it. I played the feminist bookshop back when Portlandia was just web series, like before it was an actual TV show.
When they were Thunder Ant?
Yes. Yeah. Yes. I played those.
We were watching the same thing at the same time then.
Yep.
Yeah. All right. What's your history with Party Girl, Jinxie? I want to hear about it.
I saw this like when I was a late teen, I guess, for the first time. I watched it as soon as it was available on VHS, I guess. I don't have like a first time watching it. I think I watched it because I'd seen Clock Watchers, which was another like hit from Stan the Video Man, shout out. And he's not there anymore. And I really loved Parker Posey in that. And then The Day Trippers as well. So then I think I was probably just on some Parker Posey trip at the video store. What about you?
What's Day Trippers? Because I've never seen Clock Watchers. I only know of it from John Early, Toni Collette lore.
Yeah. Oh, so Clock Watchers came out in 97 and it's so great. It's about a group of office temps. You would kill for the cast. It's like Toni Collette, yeah, Lisa Kudrow, Alana Ubach is in there. And then The Day Trippers is from 1996. And actually, Parker Posey got Liev Schreiber cast in it because of like working with him in Party Girl. And it stars Stanley Tucci, Hope Davis, and Liev Schreiber and Parker Posey. It's great.
She heard Liev Schreiber's British accent. She was like, the world needs more of this guy. Is that what I sound like when I insist on doing British accents on the podcast?
I love your voice work. And so, no, but Liev Schreiber's British accent is a problem in this film. It's like it's so easy to cast a British person or an American who can do a British accent.
Truly. And he is so bad at it.
Yeah, this is like lock, stock, two smoking barrels.
It's the level of like Americans doing Australian. It's like, oh, what, Mary, what do you say? Fish and chips. That's it. That was better. That's better than what professional actor Liev Schreiber is doing in this movie.
That was better. Yeah, so what was your first experience with Party Girl?
I feel like I'm sure my friend Anton would have told me about it when we were at uni watching Thunder Ant videos together. And I think I would have been exposed to it via like Tumblr and like the aesthetics of the film.
Oh, it has like big Tumblr Live Journal vibes, doesn't it?
Oh, yeah. And the kind of thing that you like consume in like fragments before you've ever watched the whole thing. And so I feel like watching the whole thing, I wasn't clued into like the tone of the film. I think when I first watched it, I was probably because I knew Parker Posey. So I was so familiar with Parker Posey by then. I think I was expecting like a comedy, like jokes and laughs and setups. I think the tone of the film, I was a little like, oh, I'm not sure how to take this. But then I watched it again a few years later. And I think by then I had like, A, lived in New York, but also B, met some Marys.
Yep.
And so I think for Party Girl to really land, you need to have been exposed to girls who everyone knows and no one's quite sure where they met them and no one's quite sure where they live or how they pay their rent, but they're always well-dressed and they're always at parties and they're always fun and they're always hooking up with someone hot. And you can't picture these kinds of girls in daylight.
Like
they only exist in everyone's collective imagination underneath strobe lights or like, you know, balloons.
Yeah, I feel like Mary in this, if she had gone a little bit more, like slightly more legitimate in her party promotion, she would have been like repped by Caitlin Phillips or something.
Jinxie, literally same. She would have been in New York Mag's It Girl issue in 2023. She also would have been the kind of person that we both have followed on Instagram for like 20 years. But then you go, Instagram hasn't even existed for 20 years, but you know what I mean? Like someone you followed across the internet, she probably had an opening ceremony collab like 15 years ago. And now she's like, you look at her Instagram every now and then and you're like, is this chick always pregnant? And like, she's like married someone really rich who you never see or hear from, but she's always like doing something kind of fabulous. And maybe it's gone a little granola.
Mm.
We all have those people who we follow on Instagram.
Yes. I have, it's names I'm not saying. But yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
I love that the first person that you see in this movie, and it sets the tone for the entire film, it's Lady Bunny. Mm-hmm. Like that's the first person you see like walking down some stairs, like on your way up into the party. Mm-hmm. And it's just like, here we are. I know this scene. I understand it.
Mm-hmm. And in the credits, Lady Bunny is written as like the quotation marks, Lady Bunny as itself.
Great. Excellent. Very good.
I like to imagine RuPaul watching this movie as someone in Lady Bunny's circle.
Yeah, totally. I mean,
And the soundtrack is so Slay Diva Boots the House Down. You know what I mean?
Yes, it truly is. It's extreme, like, I don't know. I guess it's like what everyone, like the kind of house music that everyone's suddenly listening to again. It's like, just listen to the Party Girl soundtrack, you're fine.
Yeah, like Leo, played by Guillermo Diaz, who plays her Mary's like friend / roommate who like they try to kiss and then they're like gross at one point. He's like,
actually,
what, you say it.
They kiss in the shower, Mary and what's his name?
Leo.
And Leo. So Mary and Leo kiss in the shower because Leo comes home late from a DJ session and Mary's like, I've got to go to work. Get out of the shower. And then she just gets into the shower and joins him and has a shower. And then they kiss and then she shudders and says, incest. And that's the end of it.
Her delivery of that and every line in this movie is like so... Oh. She's so muted compared to what I like Parker Posey can be in like a real bombastic, like comedic performance. It's almost like one of her Christopher Guest characters where she's kind of like chewing gum.
I mean, take me right back to Waiting for Guffman.
At the DQ.
At the DQ. She just wants to meet a guy, yeah. An Italian guy.
But I feel like coming into this movie, I would have known Parker Posey primarily from Josie and the Pussycats, where she's like outrageous. And then also films like Scream 3 and
Dazed and Confused.
Dazed and Confused, where she's like so larger than life.
Yeah.
And so there is something
Squeal
like,
little piggies. Yeah.
So there's something quite muted about her. Not muted by any means. Like Mary's like an iconic, incredible, like fun, energetic character. But like there's something in her performance that is like she's not overplaying it, which is really great.
I guess she's kind of fresh in this. Mm. Like it's one of her kind of earlier roles. It's like right on the precipice of Parker Posey being a massive, massive like indie it girl. Mm. This is like, you know, she's about to work with Hal Hartley et al. But I was watching this interview with her that because there was a Blu-ray release finally of this film earlier this year. It's been remastered. And it's because it's been like really hard to get. Like I've got the shittiest old DVD of it until I got the Blu-ray. And she talks about how she was actually inspired by screwball comedies to play Mary and that she worked a lot with the director just mostly on like blocking, like ways to move with certain words, she said. And in an interview in IndieWire, she said, a special shout out to the librarians who also enjoy being silly on the dance floor. I love that.
So cute. So cute. There was an interview in, I think it was in Little White Lies. And as always, these links will all be in the show notes. And she described playing Mary as Daffy. And she said,
That's such a good word. Sorry to cut you off, but truly, Daffy is such a good word for Parker Posey.
Yes. And then she said, I don't even know exactly what that means. It's just kind of empty, but playful with some screws missing. It's a magical thinker who's in her own world and is living life by instinct and heart and not really questioning things.
Oh God, Parker.
And I feel like, okay, we were going to get there eventually, but like, I feel like this is a good segue into the criticisms of this film as being kind of like culturally insensitive or like exoticizing Mustafa, who is the falafel guy that Mary ends up having like a romance with. And they have this kind of like Lebanese themed Arabian Nights, like kind of merging of lots of Middle Eastern cultures themed party.
Yeah, that is the one segment where, because I hadn't seen it in a little while and then I rewatched it and was like, oh, I'd actually forgotten a little bit about this.
Yeah. But there's the like Letterboxd enacted some torture on Daisy Von Schoerlemeyer, the writer director and the music supervisor, Bill Coleman, where they made them read reviews of Party Girl starting at 5 stars and going into like the 3-star reviews. And I was like, jail for Letterboxd for doing that.
I hate that stuff. I truly am not interested in it.
It's so of the like 2011 internet, like read tweets about yourself.
Oh my God. Someone said this mean thing about me. I'm like, and then you just have to react in a fun way to show that you're not a total like priss. And it's like, I don't know. I'm not into it.
But she says she like resists that criticism. And I think she kind of defends it in a pretty smart way where she kind of is like, Mary is insensitive. Like,
she's got no idea.
Yeah, she's like a daffy, clueless girl. Yeah, but she essentially says in this video, which again we'll link, she's like, I'm fine with those criticisms, but don't apply them to the film. Apply them to the character. Like, it's not me being insensitive. It's not Parker Posey being insensitive. It's Mary, this character who has never met someone from the Middle East in her entire life, let alone had a personal relationship with him. And she said in this really great interview with Rich Jezwiak at Jezebel that she wanted to create, like, in the cast, like this kind of diverse, playful ensemble cast. She thinks of the film as being about, quote, all the side characters in other films. So, like, you know,
great.
Guillermo Diaz as Leo the DJ, Anthony DeSando as Mary's gay friend Derek, Liev Schreiber as the bouncer Nigel, and then her own mother, Sacha Von Scherler, as Mary's librarian godmother Judy. Yeah, so the idea of these kind of all these, you know, characters who never had, like, fully fleshed out worlds getting, like, a little more time. I mean, like, Derek, the gay best friend, is kind of still relegated to gay best friend, but
he is.
Yeah. But he's an iconic one.
He's an iconic one. He's very good. Yeah, the whole exoticizing thing, I think it's kind of an interesting look in at it because, so the, if you're not that familiar, haven't seen it for a while, Mary goes to this one falafel stand and she has the same order every single day. And she says, can I have a falafel with hot sauce, a side order of baba ganoush and a seltzer, please? That's what she has every single day. And it's a perfect order, Mary. Yeah,
it's such a good order. She's getting bread with her baba ganoush, we're assuming, right?
Yeah, I'm guessing.
Or she's not getting her falafel in a wrap, maybe.
I think she's getting the falafel in a wrap and then the baba ganoush is just kind of on the falafel.
Mm.
And then she's getting, so she can eat it all in one go. There's no, like,
it's
two
not
packets.
On the side. Sure. Gotcha.
No, I hadn't actually thought about that. No, because she just walks away with one.
I had thought about it. And because I was like, if I got a side order of baba ganoush, I'd be expecting it in a container on the side. But she's not dunking anything.
No, she's not. It's already done. It's like when you get a hot dog with, like, mustard and sauce already on it.
Yeah.
You get a knish with mustard. It's already on there.
She's got falafel and hot sauce.
She only has two hands, babe.
Yeah. Look, she doesn't order like Sally in When Harry Met Sally, who would have been like on the side, not touching, with bread.
Did you make it fresh today?
Yeah.
And so she goes and gets this from Mustafa every day. But the thing I really love in this film is when Mustafa is watching this falafel stand that's been set up across the road, which is like run by two white people. And it has like the most futuristic, like weirdly postmodern design of a falafel cart you've ever seen. It looks great, can I say?
It's like watching Ray in Girls responding to like gentrified coffee shops in Brooklyn.
Totally. And so he's got the real deal. And these two like white kids are in their like fancy little uniforms that their dad's paid for. And they're serving falafels on toothpicks.
And that's just the most offensive part.
He's watching it in absolute horror. He's so angry about it. But you know, Mary keeps supporting Mustafa's biz. She doesn't go across the road, mm-mm, even though it would suit one of her outfits, I'm sure. And, you know, and they kind of fall into this sort of romantic kind of flirtation.
Mm.
And then by the time she has the Middle Eastern themed party, which I don't, you know, don't think it's, shouldn't be doing that now. But he is serving falafels and Mustafa gets really mad about it. And then she goes up to him and says, it's funny that you're making falafels. And I think that that's really a moment for the audience to be like, mm-hmm, oh God, Mary, mm-hmm, like she's not the heroine that you think she is. Like, yeah, she's this like down on her luck party girl who's like learning the ways of the library, but mm-hmm, she is culturally insensitive. She does have a really narrow worldview. And that's what the film is about, is like that kind of breaking open.
Mm. It would have been really false if she had gotten really good at the Dewey Decimal System and like learned to respect all cultures and be really culturally sensitive purely because of her relationship with Mustafa. Like that would have felt really false.
Totally. And like, there's a scene where she's doing like, she's about to go on a date with him and she's doing this like terrible singing in this like vaguely Middle Eastern way and like swinging her hips about. It's like a truly bad scene.
It's but like it's when like Samantha Jones dated the black guy in season 3.
100%. But it's very much about like, we're seeing her exoticize him in this way that we all know is like not great. And it's, yeah, it's like about seeing her narrow worldview.
Mm. there is a montage of her ordering her falafel with hot sauce and baba ganoush on the side and a seltzer day after day after day. And it's really just an excuse to see outfits.
Okay, we're up to the outfits, are we?
Well, I was watching this and I was like, this is like what the scene of Anne Hathaway when she finally gets clothes in The Devil Wears Prada wishes it could be. Like, mm-hmm. that, like, her face is a map of the world, or like, or suddenly I see, or whatever the song is.
It is that song.
It's,
I don't know the lyrics at all, but that's the only thing I know.
But I'm realizing now is that the montage, the getting ready at the very start of the movie montage, and there's a different
suddenly I see.
Yeah, maybe it's that. It's very Katie Tunstall coded Devil Wears Prada. But anyway, that Mary arriving to the falafel cart every single day to see Mustafa. Also, just before we get to the outfits and move on from Mustafa, when they first kiss,
it's up.
They're fully pashing. Mm. And it really just made me aware that, like, people don't pash anymore in movies. You don't really see people, like, tongue each other down, like, in a hot, like, a really tongue hot, locked-in pash.
Well... yeah, I don't think there was an intimacy coordinator,
like,
on this.
They're making out. That's a better word. Like, people don't really make out in movies anymore.
Yeah, I think Parker does every time she is doing that on screen.
Bo is afraid.
She's, I mean, Parker's up for anything.
Because, yeah, Mustafa's cute. Apparently, he sometimes emails Daisy von Schoelmeyer from, like, a yacht or something. She's like, I don't really, he was in one movie and it was mine and no one really knows what he does now, but he has a lot of money.
Yeah, that's the thing. He doesn't come up in any of the interviews. He seems unreachable.
Yeah.
I kind of like it, the mystery of Mustafa.
Look, he's fulfilled a lot of fantasies by, like, having sex with her in the library stacks. He's done his duty to culture forever.
He really has. Okay, the outfits are amazing. They are so good. It's one of the best, like, I can't even. What Parker wears in this film and, like, working with the... actual costume designer, I cannot remember their name right now, but there was an interview I read with her, and basically there was just no budget at all for this film. There was no real budget. They could not get designer stuff. They couldn't get any stuff, so they just borrowed it. And they raided Parker's own wardrobe, they raided the costume designer's wardrobe, and the costume designer's best friend's. And so the costume designer's best friend had, like, some designer stuff and was like, I will kill you if you get something on this. And so, like, every scene Parker had to be, like, just super, super careful that she wasn't getting it dirty.
Don't get the baba ganoush near the Todd Oldham.
Absolutely. And I love that scene when Mary, super down on her luck, goes to sell some things. And
oh, it's so heartbreaking. It's shit that she could never afford to buy again or ever find again.
Totally. And when the woman who says, like, this is vintage, not designer, I just wanted to weep watching this because, yeah, it was vintage, not designer, in 1995, but those clothes that were vintage in 1995,
I know.
Can you imagine the cost now?
I know.
Oh, my God. Even as, like, someone, I bring it up a lot, that, like, I worked in a vintage shop for a long time, but the difference in what you see in secondhand stores now, even compared to, like, my day in, like, I started working one in 2001, the difference in quality of clothes that you see now is just out of control. Like, it's so fast fashion. It's so synthetic. Mm-hmm. You pay so much money because people are much more savvy also because of the internet. And so there are more, like, Instagram sellers, eBay, Depop, what have you, Vestiaire.
The scarcity.
Yeah. So it is really hard to get that good stuff anymore. But, like, it used to just be so easy. Like, when I was a teenager, it was so easy. Like, I wore completely, completely thrifted stuff.
Well, because also in the 90s and 2000s, vintage was from incredible fashion decades of the 70s and the 80s, whereas now we have
Y2K.
2001 to aspire to. Like, take me out back and shoot me in the fucking head.
Which is what the kids are wearing, but it's not what I'm wearing.
It's not what the... What are we if not kids? It's all what the women are wearing.
Yeah, I'm not wearing low slung fucking pants anytime soon. And I didn't wear them then.
No, and I don't want. There's nothing aspirational about Von Dutch sequined hats or tops to me.
When are those tops that have. They're like Von Dutch adjacent, but they look like you've got tattoos on your arms. Remember those like really tight sort
Ed
of
Hardy.
Meshy? They're Ed Hardy, are they?
Ed Hardy was very
Ed Hardy's
tattoo culture.
Back, right?
Yeah. We could go full Saltburn with the Juicy Couture sweatpants.
Yeah, I guess so.
I think Juicy's funny.
Juicy's fine.
Remember when Britney wore Juicy to her wedding? After her wedding?
No, I don't.
Her K-Fed wedding, they all had Juicy sweatsuits. That was iconic.
I guess so.
I never could wear them because I was always too chubby for Juicy as a teen in the early 2000s.
Who's that Australian author / kind of comedian? What's her name? Kate. What's her name? She used to always be on the panel.
Langbrook?
Kate Langbrook, yes. She always wore those shirts, I remember, on the panel of like a tight sort of top that had some vague like floral or like Asian print and then like almost meshy sleeve with like a that was really her
sister had a Supre. It was like her go-to going out top, which was a black Supre singlet, and it had white handprints over the tits. She'll be listening to this. She'll love that shout. That's out cool.
I mean, recently I bought a skirt that has 3D puffy hands on the side of it.
That is so,
so
Parker Posey coded.
That is pretty.
She
party
would have
girl,
wear that,
actually, isn't
worn
it?
That in Party Girl or in Josie and the Pussycats.
Yeah, she would have. I feel good about that. I really love. I mean, I love all of the outfits. I can't pick one, but if you go to our Instagram, you will see I have prepared many slides of all of her fashions for you to revisit at your own leisure.
I don't want to just quote Parker Posey interviews, but. I'm going to. There was a really sweet moment in that Little White Lies interview with her about the re-release of this film where she talked about the 90s and like being in the world and shopping and things like that. She said, in the 90s, I remember running outside and going to the deli in my slippers and a slip, and you could just run outside. It was flirty and madcap. There was this joy and this bounce. In the 90s, there were more people on the sidewalks and working on indie movies and living in a rent-controlled apartment. There was freedom and spontaneity to walk around and go to flea markets and bookstores. There was that kind of grunginess, and you'd run into people just by walking around. And then she just goes on a tangent about like flirting with the city and like being outside and like seeing people. And like that's so much of what Mary dresses for, is like being out in the world and being this kind of like little character in her like storybook New York.
Yeah. I mean, people think of New York as being Chloe Sevigny's city, and sure it is, but it truly is Parker Posey's city. Parker Posey is, I was the number one celeb I have seen and run into in New York. I have seen her when I was living there. She was just absolutely everywhere.
Really?
She was constantly at comedy nights at Pianos on the Lower East Side. I remember once she came up to my friend and was like, I have the same coat. It's true, she did. And then the next time I saw her, she slipped over so dramatically in the snow and made like a meal out of it. It was amazing. Like, she knew everyone was watching.
She did
a
routine.
She did the full routine. Loved her for it. It looked slightly painful. And once I saw her, like, I used to see her all the time. But once I saw, like, Spider, like, the first time, is it the Tobey Maguire era?
You're talking about Spider-Man?
Yeah.
Yes. Spider-Man and Kiki. Tobey Maguire and Kiki Dance.
Yes. So I went to see that in the cinema, and Parker Posey was sitting in front of us.
Stop.
And she had smuggled in her dog, Gracie. And so Gracie was in the bag. And so I never saw that movie because all I did was look at Parker Posey and Gracie. Like, I had no idea what was going on. Like, how could you? It was also just like a random session at some like shitty cinema. It wasn't like some big event. It was just like,
I heard Parker Posey's on a podcast talking about all the times she fell over or went to the movies with Kate Jinks.
I finally have you ever listened to her episode on Marc Maron?
No.
Because it will drive you crazy because he interrupts her. This is like many, many years ago, so probably like 2011, 2012. Mm. And Yeah, that was my cutoff. That's actually why I stopped listening to WTF, because I was like, you don't interrupt Parker Posey.
It was your 13th reason.
It was my 13th reason.
Speaking of her being interrupted by, like, comedian men, she was on Conan to promote this in 1995, and there's a clip of it online. And in describing the plot of the movie, she just, like, says to him and Andy Richter, "Picture me in a library. That's funny." She tells this, like, long story about being at a party with her, like, her best gay male friend and Evan Dando being there. So it's very Your Culture Jinxy. And she describes that they see Eartha Kitt and they just want to get a photo taken with Eartha Kitt. So obviously I'm Googling trying to find this photo and I couldn't find it. But she ends the story, and Conan and Andy Richter, after, like, well, Conan mostly interrupting her the entire way through telling this anecdote, they at the end were kind of like, "That's the story. That's not a great story. That's the story." And then she just looks at them and goes, "Am I a freak?"
Yeah, she is, and that's why we love her.
Yeah, she's such a she's too much of a freak for Conan, and that's the exact right kind of person to be.
It really is. Apparently, Liv Schreiber said to Parker Posey after they had wrapped Party Girl, "I really thought you were an idiot when I met you." And she loves that. She was like, "Isn't that great?
Isn't that so funny?"
It's so funny. I also, she, when this premiered at Sundance, when people were interviewing her, she made up this story for all of the interviews that Daisy von Schoellemeyer spotted her working at the makeup counter of a department store and, like, thought she'd be perfect for this. And, like, she'd never acted before. This was her first role. And this is what she was just telling every interview. And then being, like, shocked that people just believed her, and then she just wouldn't correct them, but she'd be shocked every time.
She's so, in that way, she's so like Amy Sedaris, in that she's like, she has real fun with being famous and having, like, a microphone or a camera in her face. She's like, "I'm gonna play. This is, like, an opportunity for me to be silly."
Yeah, there's, like, not a lot of disclaimers. Like, she's just like, what you see is what you get, but also it's not, because I'm not telling you the right thing.
I feel like I would have read that story about her being discovered at a makeup counter and just being like, "Oh my God, amazing."
Well, it is literally the plot of that terrible show that starring Kim Cattrall that I watched.
Glamorous.
That is essentially.
You're going to say Muppets Take Manhattan.
Same diff.
Joan Rivers at the makeup counter with Miss Piggy.
Ah, so good. I also love that Parker just put all of her friends in this film. So are all these, like, amazing party scenes, or, like, she's talking to, what are their names, Wendell and someone. These two guys that are, like, often in scenes together, arriving together, and they just kind of are ad-libbing because they just, like, have all these inside jokes that are just on screen because it's, like, just them having fun on set, because they all did used to party together. So it does have that kind of true authenticity to it. Like, it does feel like they're having a good time on set or having a good time at the party.
Who's the person she greets in such an incredible way when she goes into Liev Schreiber, the club that Liev Schreiber works at? It's like,
Natasha.
And then they kind of, like, vogue together and everyone just, like, watches Mary.
Yeah. And Natasha is so great and graceful and amazing. And Parker Posey just has the most bored look on her face while she's doing it, striking these poses and, like, not actually holding it, because, like, her face is just, like, so heavy with, like, dramatic emotion that, like, she's just moving everywhere. It's so good.
It really just gives the vibe of Mary going to, like, the Paris is Burning parties.
Fully.
And just, like, smoking a cigarette in the crowd and just kind of, like, being really straight-faced while everyone else is cheering and then being like, "I could do that."
She's ball culture.
She's ball culture. Like, these days, a straight woman kind of, like, a straight white woman using, like, kind of ball vernacular is, like, so played out. But I have this theory that, like, Mary, as a real person in our history, was, like, the first to ever do it.
I think so. There are just so, like, Natasha. Like, brings us to so many moments of Mary being fully iconic. Can I tell you some of my favorite lines in this film that I am, like, have quoted since I first read? I love when she's, like, having a bad time and she says, I would like a nice, powerful, mind-altering substance, preferably something that will make my unborn child grow gills. I think about that a lot.
Is that our energy for our second anniversary dinner that's coming up soon, Jinxie?
Yeah, totally. And I love when like these two people arrive to the party and say, "What's up?" And she says, "The rent, and I'm not paying." And when Leo, the DJ, is like trying to come up with, like, he's trying to get this gig DJing and with, oh God, what's her name? Like Diana, the woman that he's trying to get hired by.
Yeah, I can't remember.
Struggling with her alcoholism.
Yeah, he wants to go to meetings with Mary.
Yeah. And she's like, "Just say that you DJed in London." And he's like, "Yeah, but why did I leave London?" And she says, "You got sick of all the street fashion in London, all those hats." Like, a reason to leave the United Kingdom is because you got sick of the hats. It's amazing.
Also for Mary, Ms. Hat and Gloves, to be the one to say it too.
It's so good. And then when there's like that go-go dancer who like kind of gets with Leo. No, she has like a single name. I can't remember what it is.
That's giving very much Boiler Room.
It's
like the Catronata Boiler Room where he's playing and there's like a really cool girl with like curly hair who's a singer, I think, like doing very sexy dancing a couple of people down from him. That's very Leo and the go-go dancer.
It is. And then she says, like, she gets annoyed by Mary. I can't remember what's happening. And then Mary just says, "Talk to me when you get a last name." I love it. And then one of the, I think it's like the gay best friend.
Derek.
When he says, "It's so decadent, so silly, so Mary." I love it.
The dream to be understood by your gay like that.
Yeah.
I like when he says, he's talking about this guy, Carl, all movie Carl is like not returning his calls or evading him. And he says, "Carl and I connected that night from the essence, from the ancient center of our beings." And Mary says, "The two of you are on ecstasy. It dries out your spinal fluid." And my only other one is that when Mary has heard about the myth of Sisyphus from Mustafa and then tries to, it like really hits something in her and she decides she's an existentialist and she's trying to explain it to Leo. And she says, "It's a myth about this guy who had to roll or push this incredibly huge rock up this steep mountain. Every time he would get to the top of the mountain, the rock would roll down again. He'd watch this and walk back down the mountain and do it all over again forever." And then Leo just goes, "Drag." And she says, "It's a metaphor for life, Leo. It's famous."
It's giving Cher Horowitz in Clueless when she corrects Paul Rudd's like older girlfriend. And like she says, it's when the other girl, Heather, misquotes Hamlet. And then Cher steps in and says like, "Hamlet didn't say that. It was like that Polonius guy did." And then the other girl says, like, "I think I remember Hamlet accurately." And she's like, "Well, I think I remember Mel Gibson accurately."
And Borat's little smirk on his face looking at her in the rearview mirror.
I thought you said Borat's little smirk for him. I was like, wow, that's a different movie. Amazing.
My stepsister.
My wife.
Fun fact.
Yeah.
You know how there's like a fight with the guy who's in line at the club where Liev Schreiber is the bouncer?
Oh, yeah.
That's Artie Bucco from The Sopranos, and he's credited as tough guy.
I love looking at those kinds of credits.
No one less tough in the history of film or TV than Artie Bucco, the cook from Sopranos.
I love when she is like starting to really get into the library sciences and she orders Leo's vinyl
by the Dewey Decimal
System. It's so good. It's so good. And then I just love how you can see like all the genres that she's picked out and there's like divas, male. It's like, it's just so good.
And she's like, "I made 700 card catalogs. It took me all day, Leo." And he's so furious at her and it just does not faze her daffy little face one bit. She's like, "You should be grateful to me." And I'm so grateful to her because that's like, you know, it tickles something in my brain, the spreadsheet of it all. But yeah, her like subcategories within the categories. I really have gone through phases in my life, maybe spurred on by each viewing of this film, to learn the Dewey Decimal System.
Oh, wow.
Like, I really would like to understand that level of, like, cataloging, but I wouldn't use it for anything in my life.
No, I mean, like, I'm a genre slash alphabetical.
I'm alphabetical always, yeah. I'm like format first. So like DVDs, VHS, books, coffee table books, magazines, you know, et cetera. Yeah. And within like magazines, it's year, you know, it's organized chronologically, but everything else is alphabetical.
Okay. What about books in the, do you separate nonfiction from fiction?
Mm-mm.
Oh,
my,
what?
Well, my bookshelves are all behind me. I can see your eyes darting around, but I only have them organized in here based on what I've read and haven't read.
Oh, okay.
And so I kind of shop from half my bookshelf.
Yeah. Okay. That's fair.
Yeah.
Yeah. See, I go, God, now I'm realizing how, what a pill I am.
Fiction and nonfiction is an interesting one. I would like to do that.
I go further than that. I do fiction and nonfiction. And then within the nonfiction, then I have like topics.
Huh.
So I have like, say I have all my memoirs together, my collections of essays together, like if books on craft or books on like houses or like interiors, design, stuff like textiles, they're all separated into, oh God.
I love your bookshelves. I need to spend a little more time down that little.
Now that I say it out loud, it's a little much, hey?
No.
What about like vinyl? Like I'm A to Z, but then I have a section for like, compilations and a section for like soundtracks.
I like that. My vinyl isn't organized at all. My vinyl and my CDs is purely just like space reasons. It used to be all alphabetical, but I've moved so many times.
Mm.
No, that's a lot.
Do you still have CDs?
Yeah, I used to have a lot more CDs and a lot more DVDs and VHS than I do now, but I have like a kind of plastic like crate full of CDs still.
I at one stage, because I was moving so much, I got rid of all of the jewel cases and I put them into those like CD booklets that have like four to a page, and I used those for years. And then when I moved again, like for the last time, I was like, I can't even lug like I've got too many of these.
Yeah.
And so I spent like too much time converting them to like MP3s or something.
Yeah, iPod.
Yeah, but now it's like all those CDs that I spent like so much money on and like really collected for a long time. I don't even know where that like external hard drive is.
Yeah.
I've got no idea.
I've got like two broken ones behind me, but I also learned something really distressing earlier this year when I had to DJ at Melbourne Zoo. They had like two brand new Pioneer CDJs set up, and I was DJing before, I think it was 10 Things I Hate About You. And so perfect film soundtrack as far as I'm concerned. And so I bought a bunch of my like teen movie soundtracks to play, and I still have them on. I've got like Can't Hardly Wait on CD. I've got like a bunch Looking for Ella Brandy, like a bunch on CD. And I brought them all because I was like, this is how I should be DJing before this film. And I had such tech issues because I was like, fuck, my burned CDs, my bought CDs, they keep getting spat out by the CDJs. Pioneer CDJs made and released now, brand new ones, don't play CDs.
Why? What? Why?
They're called CDJs. They have CD slots and they only play MP3s or AUX. Or they like connect through to your like decks.
So do they, what? So do you, if you had like a burnt CD with,
you put it in and it spins and it thinks and then it spits it out.
Those fuckers.
And I thought I'd done something wrong. And then our tech guru friend of the show, Harvey Sutherland, arrived and looked it up because he couldn't figure it out either. So I was like, now it really is an issue. And he was like, yeah, they don't play them anymore. And then I tweeted, CDJs don't play CDs anymore. Call them USBJs.
Yeah, what is this world coming to?
I know. It's actually really distressing. And if you, listener, agree that this is not how it should be, let's like start a petition or something.
Change.org.
I've got my little like USB plug-in CD drive that I can still like burn CDs with because it's so important to me to have that utility.
Yeah, of course.
Anyway, so party girl.
My other favorite genre of music is too druggy.
Stop, that's one of them.
Yeah.
We need to screenshot that and like take notes and write them down on our Instagram or something.
Yeah, we do.
But that that montage of as like Believe in Me is playing as Mary's learning the Dewey Decimal System, like I was getting so pumped up for her. I was like, I fucking believe in you, Mary.
Oh, so do I. And like, you know, that brings us to the kind of final scene where she decides she's actually going to like go and learn the library sciences.
Her little glasses.
And she comes in like black turtleneck, like she's, and it's still a great look.
It is. And she's so, like, she really doesn't feel yet like her party girl side and her librarians, her aspiring librarian side can like gel together, because her friends have thrown her this incredible surprise birthday party with a piñata.
And a stripper.
And a stripper. But the piñata. The piñata. And but she needs Judy to come over so she can tell her that she's serious. She knows the Dewey Decimal System. She's going to become a librarian. And she's so afraid that Judy won't take her seriously because there's a birthday party going on in her apartment. But she can be both.
She can be both. Well, it's all because that godmother has said the entire time things like, your mother was a woman with no common sense. So, like, what's a girl to do?
What's a girl to do? Judy, you've got to be nicer to your friend, R.I.P., Mary's mum.
Yeah, she does. I love when the friends all stick up for Mary, though, about, like, actually she really is interested in library sciences.
Yeah.
I think it's Derek who says, she lent me a book on body piercing.
That's true. Yeah, they all just tell anecdotes about, like, needing a book and Mary finding it.
It's so good. It's so good.
It's really good. A fun, not so fun fact, but an interesting fact that I learned from that, the interview that Rich Jesuiak from Jezebel, R.I.P. Jezebel, by the way, did with director Daisy von Schillermayer, is he kind of put the film's release into the context of the Club Kid murders that happened in New York like a year later. And he said the movie Party Girl kind of summarized and ultimately eulogized an era. Like it kind of, that downtown club scene was so affected by that news that by the time this movie came out, the scene that it was capturing kind of was no more.
Yeah, that's really true. Mm. God, I want to watch that Party Monster again.
I've never seen it.
Oh, you have to watch that. And then like when the Club Kids appeared on like Donahue, was it Donahue, the TV show?
Was Igby Goes Down.
That's very separate.
Very separate.
Yeah. I think it's just that there's a cult connection in New York.
And I've just combined them in my head.
So I don't remember I remember seeing Iggy Pop Goes Down when it first came out, but
there was something about it. I used to always see it at the video shop, and even like as a kid who had no boundaries around what I could and couldn't watch, I was like, I'm not ready for whatever this is.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's true. I did the same thing with Wayne's World. I didn't see Wayne's World until I was like 20. And I was like, oh, I could have been watching this whole time.
Yeah. I remember seeing that with my dad, my sister, when I was a kid, when it came out.
It was on my dad's VHS shelf next to like Malcolm X and like other intense movies. And so I think in my head, it's always been off limits.
Well, I think my dad was shocked by it. I think my sister probably chose to take us to see it. Yeah. It's not his vibe.
Okay.
No.
All right, Jinxie, do you have some Party Girl see alsos?
I sure do. I think you have referenced every interview that I was going to, so they're in the show notes, so that's great. Also, the films Clockwatchers and The Day Trippers with Parker Posey. If you've got Criterion Channel access, they've actually just released a Parker Posey set. So pretty much like all her films are now available to stream. I think there's like, not all of them, but there's probably like 20 or something.
Oh, wow.
So that's great. I also recommend her own memoir, which was called You're on an Airplane, a Self-Mythologizing Memoir by Parker Posey. It came out in 2018. I remember receiving a number of those books for Christmas that year.
Do you have any spare? Because I never read it.
I have a look. It's really good. I'll lend it to you anyway.
Go through the Kate Jinx decimal system and see where it lands.
So it's in my memoir section.
It's under nonfiction, memoir, celebrity, indie actress.
It's under nonfiction, memoir, P.
Love that.
Yeah. And I also, I think this is a good spin-off to rewatching or watching High Octane, which has a similar sense of kind of loopy fun. We did a whole episode on it. Of course, it's by Sofia Coppola and Zoe Cassavetes. It's all on YouTube. And my last
downtown, like, droll Queens.
Yes, totally. And my last one is a film that's kind of like a precursor in a way to Party Girl. It's also set in New York. It's from 1989. It's called Slaves of New York, based on the Tama Janowitz book of stories. It's really fun. It's I remember my sister really loving it when I was growing up, but it was like one of those things that was a bit too old for me. I didn't get it until I watched it much later. But yeah, it stars Bernadette Peters. It has a great, great cast in it. I think the Steve Buscemi's in it as well. But it's directed by James Ivory. Anyway, it's super fun. It's really good. Love. And it's like a lot of New York, like art scene parties.
Okay. What was that called again?
Slaves of New York.
Slaves of New York. All right. Yeah. So I'll add the Little White Lies interview, the Jezebel one, those couple of clips of Parker Posey and the Letterboxd torture. And my only other one is recommending 200 Cigarettes, another movie that is very hard to track down, that Guillermo Diaz, who plays Leo, is also in and has long been on our list for a poodle. We'll get there eventually. It's not going anywhere.
No, get the DVD off eBay.
Yeah, it's a real one of those, isn't it? Criterion, when are you releasing 200 Cigarettes, baby? Get Courtney Love on a press tour.
Oh my God, yes.
Don't.
No, don't.
Actually, don't.
No, don't.
All right. Thanks so much for listening. You can find all the photos of Mary's looks and other juicy bits from Party Girl over on our Instagram at See Also Podcast. And if you're not following us already, that's where you do it.
That is where you do it. Thanks as ever to Samuel Hodge for our imagery and Harvey Sutherland for our original theme music.
Bye.
See ya.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Hi, I'm Megan Rinks.
And I'm Melissa D. Montz.
And like every other person with access to a microphone, we started a podcast.
On Mondays, we release Don't Blame Me, which is an advice podcast where listeners call in and we share our thoughts on situations such as what to do if you're going to your boyfriend's family function and you haven't told him that you previously slept with both his twin brothers.
Then on Thursdays, we release our podcast, But Am I Wrong?, where we ethically gossip about pop culture, politics, our lives, and your lives. Listeners write in and we tell them if they're wrong or right in a situation. Are you the hero or the villain?
On Tuesdays and Fridays, we throw in a little something extra as well.
Well, something, something. We strive to create a community grounded in activism, mental health, and inclusivity. Think of us as like your blunt, honest friends who give you advice that you need to hear, not what you want to hear. But we're also always rooting for your success. What we lack in credentials, we make up for in
opinions.
We do that in every episode too.
We're professional unprofessional, so if you're looking for a new slate of podcasts to add to your routine, we're here for you.
Acast recommends.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.